Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, hope it's Jackson Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. S&P futures, we got a new Fed chair. Well, maybe. S&P futures are everything's down here this morning. S&P's down 23, NASDAQ futures down 122. This is on top of yesterday, S&P down 9, NASDAQ down 172. We had a big flip yesterday with Microsoft down a bunch, but then Apple was up on the close. So, anyway, Kevin Warsh is our new Federal Reserve chair to succeed Jerome Powell. It's assuming Jerome Powell resigns. That'd be interesting if all of a sudden he didn't. I suspect he probably will, but he doesn't really have to. Kevin, what's up? How are you?
I'm doing.
I can barely hear. Are you in the car?
Yeah, I am in the car. Let's see.
That's
Let's
better.
See if
that's
I can
better.
Make it a little bit better. How's that?
That's good.
Is that an improvement?
Very much so.
I just have to speak up.
Yep. No, you're good. Where are you off to?
I just have an early meeting on campus, so, you know, an 8:30 meeting. So I figured if I was on with you for an hour and had to scurry over there for 8:30, I'd probably be late. So
now you're going to be early. So there you go.
Now I will be early. When I get there, I'll probably go inside. So if you lose me for a minute, I'll jump back on. You know, I'm maybe 10 minutes away now.
Well, there you go. So we have a new Fed chair. Again, it's tricky because the Fed chairman, when his term is over, if he doesn't get renominated, usually resigns. But doesn't really have to. I don't think anybody's ever not. But Powell actually, his term is not up for like another maybe 2 years, even though his term on the Fed board. So the idea is that Powell would actually resign, opening up a spot on the Fed board where you put Warsh on as the Fed board guy and then pick him as the chairman from the group there, which I suspect will happen, but if Powell's pissed off enough at Trump, he could stay there, although I don't know why he'd want to. I wouldn't, but I don't think he will either, but that is the possibility. So, anyway, just letting you know.
That would be a pretty spiteful thing to do, which is something we always say we hate about Trump, is that he could be so spiteful, so I guess we really would hate to see that happen with Powell as well.
Yeah, plus I don't think Warsh is a bad pick. I mean, I think these guys are. It's almost dozen.
I think anybody named Kevin is probably a good pick.
Well, there you go. Plus, I mean, if you look at the stuff we talk about on the show, despite all the squabbling and everything that we sometimes do, but if you look at all the stuff we talk about, we're talking about a maybe a 25-year, 30-year rush of, I'll use the term, governance. Be it congressional and who knows, maybe even judicial and certainly presidential, that has us really painted into a corner, Kevin. And I don't know if we're painted into a corner. I don't know if Rembrandt gets you out of there. I mean, it doesn't seem like whoever you put in there, there's no magic here. I don't think anywhere on anything we're talking about. I mean, we got problems and we have to address them somehow. And I don't see either side dying to do it, to tell you the truth. But you know what? I mean, what is?
Well, go ahead. The guy he's going to appoint is he has given a lot of speeches where he says he thinks the Fed has gotten away from its mission, that it should be worried more about employment and so on, and not so much about what the markets are. So we'll see if that translates into any kind of an action. And of course, nobody wants to take any action that's going to be a big shock. So it would have to be on some kind of gradual path. And I don't know if anybody's going to announce that we're putting you on a gradual path, and here's step one. It would be kind of nice to see, We'll see what he comes up with in terms of policy.
Well, I don't think he has any chance of coming up with any policy, to be honest with you. And I say that because, I mean, I have a, when it comes to Fed stuff, I have a pretty good memory. When Powell was first in there, and we had kind of run the money supply up, and the markets had run up, in Trump's first term, Powell started pushing back and actually lowering, letting the stuff run off the balance sheet, and was doing those sorts of things, and the market actually went down. I don't know if everybody remembers, he was called to the White House, and I don't know if he was paddled or waterboarded, but the next day, Trump designed it. I don't know if Biden designed it. But somehow or another, between 2000, or certainly after 2008, we've had this relentless pouring of money into the system that has caused a wealth bubble, and people who own assets, mainly stocks, are way richer than anybody else. I mean, there's no way you could have gotten those kinds of returns by working a job and getting a raise. So now we're left with this, okay? Now, and we also have a huge inflation bubble brought upon by COVID, which I don't know why they felt they had to put 35 or 40% money supply in the system in 18 months. And this was Trump and Biden together. You can't even tell when one left and one came in. So you had this massive kick up in price level that people are still gagging at. So between one and the other, I don't see, if we drop, right now, Kevin, I would agree with you. I'd like to see the Fed do what the Fed is supposed to do. But is anybody close to Washington, left or right, wants the wealth bubble to drop and all of a sudden people's stocks to be down 40% where maybe they ought to be? Nobody wants that.
And of course they don't. So, there's other competing interests as well, such as, there's a lot of debt that's got to roll over, and they want interest rates low for that.
Yep.
Because we did everything short term for several years, and you know, pretty much everything COVID related just was completely wrong.
Everything.
It's like every decision made, whether it was how we approached it from a healthcare standpoint, or how we approached it from an economic standpoint, how we approached it with all the shutdowns and had them go for so long. All of that was wrong. It was just the wrong decision time after time after time. We talked about a lot of that as we went through it on the show. So this is, I don't think we're being Monday morning quarterbacks when we say that.
I think, Kevin, be honest with you, as I recall those shows, can I say that you were agreeing with me? I don't think either one of us, even Carl, disagreed with a lot of the decisions as they were made. The lack of any kind of a review, even 2 and 3 and 6 weeks later, and an ability to change your mind when you knew you were wrong, is what really startled me. I don't think everybody stay in their house for a week or two. I don't know that was so horrible, but not to realize after a couple of months it was really a bad idea. That I thought was the problem. I mean, closing stores for a week or two, I don't know if you and I would have necessarily done that, but someplace somewhere, the governor's got to go down the street and say, gee, Kevin's blue jean shop is closed, but boy, we're letting people sell blue jeans at Walmart. What are we doing here? I mean, there was no reflection, no sort of a... As you know, I have a different view of the world because I do trades for people every day. And guess what? They're not all going to be right. The trick is recognizing the ones that aren't right, trying to fix them or get out of them. I mean, I'm used to being wrong. I'll be wrong 3 times by noon today. These other people, somehow or another, they don't have the same mentality. Why don't I have this restaurant closed when they're serving hot dogs at Costco? Why don't I open the restaurant tomorrow? Oh, you can't do that. You said it needed to be closed. I don't care. Now I'm seeing what I did, and I'm thinking I need to adjust this a little bit. Don't we have any kind of capability?
Tom, I think that was a big part of it. I also think that the other big piece of it, and almost the more egregious piece, was that any dissenting opinions got censored.
Right.
They got censored in all kinds of venues, and especially in treatment. But you know, I think it, to me the most preposterous thing was social distancing. If you stay 6 weeks 6 feet apart, geez, you're not going to catch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But don't get 5 feet, because that virus knows the 5 foot line. It just doesn't know the 6 foot. And you know, there was stupid stuff. I think a fair amount of that was to cover the ass of the people who were responsible for it in the first place.
Yep.
So you know, a lot of that decision making was you know, was just you know, I'm either going to pay the price or we'll let all of society pay the price. You know,
well,
hell, that's an easy call. Let society do it. Oh shit, that's, you know, yeah, that's just ridiculous.
I like the one where, remember Angelica, our producer.
Yeah. Sure.
Angelica is a terrific young lady and just happens to be very attractive. Not that anybody ever noticed.
Oh shit. She's a beautiful young woman, but she's really smart and personable young woman too.
Yeah, don't tell her that. You know, can't tell her that. But anyway,
I would tell her that every time.
Yeah,
I
me
like
too.
Angela.
And she's out walking on the lakefront. Now, you're not supposed to. They said you could walk, but you weren't supposed to stop. So she's out a couple of miles. She sits down on the park bench and she's looking out over the water. It's a beautiful morning. And these two cops show up. Hey, you gotta keep moving. She's like, I gotta walk. I'm going to guess that they just wanted to see her walking away.
Could have been.
Now, I'm not saying that that wouldn't be something most people might not look at, but still, tell somebody they got to roust them and move them. She's the only person at 300 yards is a little crazy, wouldn't it?
Well, and think of things like, you know, hell, let's plow over this this skate park so that nobody
yeah,
can, you know, go skateboard. I mean, it's just over and over and over again, the rank stupidity done and saying, well, this is what the science says. Hell, and if you disagreed, it was a political issue.
Oh yeah.
You know, what an awful time. And we're still paying a severe price, you know, out of the educational system. The people that we pretty much for 2 years knocked out of normal education, you know, it has effects not only on their academic achievement, which is showing up, but it's also showing up in their social development.
Yep,
and that, you know, that's a big problem. You know, we screwed kids terribly.
Well, the guy that was Audrey's cousin who passed, unfortunately, but he had three kids, right? And he and his wife, and they live, they're at home, I think they're, I don't know if they're in Homer Leonard or Joliet Township. They're in Lamont, so I don't know where the hell that is. But anyway, the three schools, one kid's going to, he's late grammar school. They go to sixth grade. The girl, I think, is in, what's seventh and eighth grade, Kevin? We never had that. Is that middle, what do they call that, middle school?
Junior high school.
He's in there, and then the oldest one's like a freshman in high school. The schools are within three or four blocks of each other. One of them, you got to go to class. But if anybody has COVID, they send that room home. And if two people have COVID in the room, they shut the whole school down for a week. Somebody else is totally not in school. They're from home. And the other one is like part-time or something. The guy goes, there's three schools, three blocks apart. And guess what? They all come home and sit in the same living room and watch TV. You know, are these people morons or what are they?
Yes. Yes, they are.
Hey, I got a kind of
While you're talking, I'm going to walk up to my office. I don't think you'll lose me, but if you do, I'll be back on in a minute.
All right, I have a somewhat of an odd question. I mean, maybe it's more a Carl question, but just you're observant. I'm not saying you're hanging around funeral homes, but the gentleman in my building, a Hispanic guy, a lot of the people from his town in Mexico all settle in Chicago. So there's a community here, sort of like a lot of my Italian people from the town in Italy settle in Columbus, Ohio. I mean, it happens. So he says he went to another funeral this weekend, and somebody, lady was like 62 or something. So she was perfectly healthy last week, some heart issue. And he goes, all I'm doing is going to funerals. He goes, and I talked to the priest. The priest said, I've never buried so many people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. He goes, once in a while something will happen, an accident or whatever. He goes, but I'm burying people way younger than I ever used to bury people. Are you seeing that at all? I mean, I wonder if they're in. Is this a COVID stick overflow? What is this?
I told you so.
Yeah, there you go, right there.
Well, I'm saying, but Kevin, have you noticed anything like that?
Well, here's my observation. How many Let's just take basketball, pro and college basketball. How many people are missing games? Because basketball, there were hardly ever injuries. Now there isn't a team that doesn't play a game where you don't have people that are just down with soft tissue issues. You know, just things like that. We've screwed up people, and so the question to ask for all of those situations when they're saying I haven't buried so many people is how many boosters?
Well, actually, it's way worse than that. But you know, here's the thing. You know, Chief, you give people way too much credit. The idea that maybe this stuff sounded reasonable. Actually, if you go back and you read some of my, well, you can't because Google forced me to take them down under threat of being completely blackballed off the internet. Some of my original commentary on this, when it first started, was that all of it was stupid, including the shutdowns. The correct action for the American people to take when that began, and the cops showed up and said, get out of the bar, this place is closed, is you shoot them.
Well, that's one thought.
Well, by the way, there's more people than there are cops. So if the American people had stood up and said, uh-uh, that would have been the end of it in an hour.
Well, everybody didn't want to die.
Well, you know what? Hey, welcome to today, where we have a 10% excess death rate and a disability rate, which, by the way, the CDC can play games with how they classify deaths. The disability rate is not their data set. All right? The disability rate continues to go up during a supposed economic boom, which never has happened before. Therefore, it's probably real.
Yeah, I would say it is.
All right, well, by the way, you're old enough. Kevin might be too.
Well, I'm way old enough.
Well, yeah. I mean, I see the gray hair in the little picture here, right?
There's less of it now.
Well, I'm just saying, hello. I mean, my photograph, I got a hat on. We all three of us remember in the early 1980s when AIDS started, the exhortations out of a particular little garden gnome, the same garden gnome who ran the same crap this time, that told us all that if we slept with a woman, ordinary, heterosexual, what boys and girls like to do, which is the whole reason that humans exist, by the way, that one of us was going to kill the other. The fear of death is a tremendous motivator of action. It tends to work, right? Guess what? He knew he was lying. The people out in California, for political reasons, kept the bathhouses open, even though they knew darn well where the transmission vector was out there. They had the data. But you can't lose an election when when 20% of the people that are in the, that are electors, voters, go to bathhouses and, do you-know-what on a daily basis with random individuals. And you can't also, because, oh, God, that's politically incorrect, you can't tell the truth about where that transmission is coming from. And the other big vector, of course, was IV drug abuse. All right? But here's the interesting thing.
Actually, it was a real lot. It was just regular blood transfusion.
Well, before they figured out, yeah, they were, and the other problem was they also knew that the blood supply was not being accurately screened.
Well, they didn't have a screen.
Okay, well, guess what?
Yeah.
Virtually everybody who was a hemophiliac and had to have those transmissions, virtually everyone in the country was killed during those years.
Do you remember, now that you're testing memory lane, we were living down south, Dr. J and I, JD had the big house down, so it was fun. We used to get, before the internet, We always get, we either got Time or Newsweek, and we always got U.S. News and World. And it would, one week Time showed up, and the thing was thick as, like, you know, it wasn't like a phone book, but it was pretty damn thick. And in the middle, because his AIDS had started, nobody knew what it was. I mean, nobody, certainly the Midwest, most people here didn't know what it was. And so they had the faces of AIDS.
I know.
People
yeah,
that
I
died
remember.
From, I mean, it was, I don't know if the things, I don't know, I don't think I still have it, but the people who died from AIDS in California were some of the wealthiest people who went in for, like, you know, a hip replacement and got a pint of blood. You know who died from it? A horrible death was, what's her name? Miss Kitty in Gunsmoke, Amanda Blake.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a regular pint of blood.
Well, yeah, and here's the thing, all right? So here is the history of exactly how this was played during those years. Now, during those years, we did not know how to stop how to actually stop this thing, all right? I mean, we knew how it was being transmitted. We knew it was going.
Once they got the test for the blood, it subsided quite a bit.
Well, to a large extent, okay? Now, my sister, who ultimately passed due to extraordinary alcohol consumption, but during her life, she liked to use anything that would get high, that you could get high on, and wasn't very picky about what they were.
Yeah, okay. Well, that happens.
Well, I mean, you know, that's a sad story for a lot of people, right? I mean, we've talked about the arc of despair and things like this, all right? So this is, you know, it's not exactly a new story, right? It's as old as humanity. All right. But there was a extended period of time right in the middle of this where she was using IV drugs. She was a heroin addict and spent an awful lot of time in dope dens shooting herself up, and in fact enough of it that ultimately the reason she stopped shooting up heroin was that she couldn't manage to find a vein that would work anymore in her
arms.
Yeah,
that happens. Well, I've heard it happens. I mean,
well, and she started shooting herself up in her leg and in her hip, and got a load of bad stuff, got a hip infection that went septic and nearly killed her. Okay.
Wow.
Now, to get there, the only reason I give you this context is because it tells you exactly how long and how much of this she did, all right? Never got AIDS. What she did get was hepatitis C.
Well, that's not so good either.
Well, no, it's not, and...
That was before they had a cure for that.
No, there was, but she didn't have any money, and Medicaid wouldn't pay the $80,000 that Sovaldi cost. And she refused to take my advice, which is get your passport over to India, where the entire course of treatment is under $1,000. Sit there for 3 months in a flea-bitten, ragtag hotel, eat curry for 3 months, come home and be cured.
With either an appreciation or a hatred of curry.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that's a fantastic answer to the problem, but even back then, the medical monopolists were killing people for profit, and there you go.
I don't see any end.
Oh, by the way, all this time back, and nobody's done an effing thing about any of it,
well,
Chief.
Well, go back to, Kevin, I think is on, but how many more people, I was going to ask you when I get this anecdotal stuff from my friends, how many more people are actually, quote, dying than are supposed to?
It's the excess death rate is running at about 10%.
Has that ever happened before?
Not over this kind of a period of time. This is the really bad part of this is that the calming down, if you will, of it. There's a substantial shift. All right, so I mean, you know, during COVID itself. The hospitals and other medical centers were killing people with their treatment protocols.
Well, they weren't letting people in either, which killed people.
But they were stuffing people full of remdesivir, which has a 1 in 5 chance of destroying your kidneys.
There are all kinds of people who missed their breast cancer treatment, missed their own treatment.
You know what, Chief? That is nonsense. Okay, and seriously, it is. Okay, there's a difference between having active cancer and not being able to get it treated, all right? I mean, obviously, we know what happens if you don't treat active cancer. And this trope, and it is a lie, that runs around about so-called early, you know, the screenings and stuff like this being interrupted. Now, yes, it is true that in some cases you catch things that otherwise would get you and you can cure them. Okay, that is absolutely true, that that does happen. However, if you look at the actual data, and I've written articles about this, I've talked about this for a long time. If you look at the actual data, the number of people, the gross number of people dying from these conditions, the top five cancers, has not gone down materially at all. Now, what has happened is people die more horribly, more slowly, and more expensively, but they still die of it. All right. So the idea that this is actually stopping people from being killed by those conditions, by the data itself, is false.
Well, what I'm saying is some hospitals would not let anybody in, even though
I think
most people got COVID in the hospital. I did.
You know, well, it was okay. Okay. So very early on, like we're talking like March of 2020. Okay.
Yeah.
And by the way, we're now in this window where we're 5 years down the road from when this first started, right?
Yep.
You know, a little more, maybe six. Okay. Anyway, we're coming around on the annual, you know, reflection period of time when this stupidity began again. One of the things I said, I was looking at the data, and this was just on data analysis, nothing else, and the fact that our hospitals and our medical system refused to put in place the tuberculosis-style sanitarium model. And I said, if you don't do this, you're going to kill a million Americans. Well, we did kill a million Americans. And essentially, the bottom line was that this was an easily manageable problem. We knew how to do it. And it's this. If you are a caregiver, if you're a doctor, nurse, whatever, you know, even the janitor that keeps the place running, if you are not seroconverted, you do not have antibodies for COVID, you're not leaving. You can come into work, but you're not leaving until you seroconvert. Once you seroconvert, you can come and go as you please.
Yeah, but they weren't about to do that because the people who had it, people like me, they still shunned them. I should have been able to go anywhere, and then they didn't.
Well, that's right, Chief, and the reason they didn't do it is exactly that they knew that if they did that, then all this BS that they were running had to stop, okay, because anybody who got it was presumptively safe.
Hey, well, we still have Kevin. We can talk about this a little later because we got a lot of stuff to talk about today. But
yeah.
Kevin, I don't know if you heard this morning, they're talking about all these layoffs, and they're due to, you know, whenever in my whole lifetime, every time somebody lays people off, there's always some other excuse. It's not them.
Now it's AI.
I guess my question is for the Bodias, as they say in the South Side. What job right now, I mean, we're talking about 16,000 people at Amazon. What entry-level job right now is being done by AI instead of the guys butting the seat? I mean, is there some list of these kinds of jobs that AI perfectly does? I mean, I know in factories use robotics, and I can see all that. I mean, I don't know it as much as you guys because you're teaching it, but I can see where that can happen. But right now, I don't see 16,000 people being tossed out by AI. I mean, what are they doing? They're not driving the...
Let's start with what's happening.
Yeah.
Because what's happening is that if you go back and you look over the last several years, and a lot of this was hiring done in the name of AI, we're all going to do this development and so on, that especially tech companies and tech organizations just went wild on hiring. No discipline to it whatsoever.
Right.
And now they're paying a price because they don't know how they're going to monetize AI such as it is now. I've shared my thoughts as to where there is really, you know, where the money is in it right now, and I think it's just your garden variety use cases for high speed Google, you know, or high speed search engines. I don't know how else to put it other than that. But I do think there are some use cases. And so now they are blaming AI because they don't want to say, we screwed up, we hired too many people, we're choking on the expense of all the people we hired, and therefore we are doing cutbacks. So that, to me, that's my look at what's going on. Carl, I don't know if you agree or not.
I do in part, and I disagree in part.
Okay.
Okay. So in part, yes. One of the things that is becoming increasingly apparent, and I warned of this when this whole AI craze started, was that people were going to try to use it as a replacement for butts in seats in various coding applications in particular, and that AI essentially, if you boil down what it does, it scrapes Stack Overflow, which is a public place where people talk about various coding problems, and pastes together pieces from what it can publicly scrape off the internet, which at Stack Overflow happens to be one of the largest places where that kind of stuff is posted.
So they're stealing other people's talk, sort of.
Well,
some of it's public, some of it's proprietary.
Yeah, some of it's public, some of it's not. But the problem with all of it is that all of it is what you see there. Some of it is garbage. I mean, hot garbage, okay? Like out the back end of a horse. Some of it is half-baked garbage, which is, between those two, it's probably 95% of it. Now, the thing is, half-baked garbage, because it's half, because the flaw is that it's half-baked, you know, it's the cookie dough that has salmonella in it, but if you actually bake the cookies, then it, you know, you kill the bacteria, right? The half-baked garbage is somewhat useful, but incomplete and dangerous, extremely dangerous, if left half-baked. And the reason for that is there's no security in it. And so now what you're starting to see, and by the way, there's been a bunch of these, and a couple of them have formal CVEs now, is, for example, you've got a place that supposedly makes appliances that people use to try to secure networks. Well, it has a cloud interface, like everybody else does these days. And as it turns out, this place has gone full-on CEO and CTO and everybody else out there crowing about how wonderful AI coding is. My God, we're getting 100 times the productivity in our da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And just a few days ago, up pops a CVE that allows anybody who happens to have one of their accounts to get into anyone else's account and manipulate their stuff.
Oh, that's not so good.
I think you'd call that bad.
Yeah.
Right? All right. So, and now, do I know that that particular piece of stupidity came out of an AI? No, I don't, because, of course, they haven't admitted it and won't. Okay? But can I reasonably presume that that's probably what happened? Yeah, and it probably did. And so this, along with the basic issue that all these systems have, which is that they're hideously expensive and no one's making money on them, is a monstrous problem. Okay, now, here's another cute piece of this. I don't know if you caught this, Chief, but a couple of days ago, Tesla comes out and says, by the way, we're killing a couple of our car lines, okay, a couple of our models.
Well, they're not making money in cars at all, are they?
Well, okay, their order volume is way down, okay? They have two models which are both losing share, okay? They're both seeing negative unit sale numbers. They have a third one, the Cybertruck, which is a commercial failure. It's garbage.
Plus, it's ugly.
Hey, listen, my daughter calls them garbage trucks. Okay, she says that's what they look like. That's her.
Looks like a dumpster.
Yeah, it looks like a rolling dumpster. Okay, I mean, that's her con. Now, this is someone in her age bracket speaking and saying, I wouldn't have one of those things if you gave it to me. And so, you know, I mean, that's a fairly strong opinion, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But here's the thing. Commercially, it's a failure. They've sold something like 25,000 of them, and they could produce 10 times that. They have the factory space for it, but nobody wants them. So commercially, that unit is a failure. And that he's hitching his wagon to, A, driverless vehicles, for which he's got maybe 50 of them in beta in Austin, and nothing else. So basically a cab with no wheel, okay? So yeah. Can't be manually controlled, and Optimus robots. Now, and then, in order to prop this up, what pops up on my feed last night, that that Tesla is maybe going to merge with either XAI or SpaceX, which, by the way, is the only reason that the stock hasn't completely collapsed.
It's up $10 this morning.
Well, but that's why it hasn't collapsed, okay, is because absent one of those two things...
Well, they got $11 billion in carbon credits. If you look at the stuff for SpaceX, they've gotten $38 billion from the government. Totally.
Yeah, so the basic problem here is that the guy builds a car factory and a car company that only exists because he stole the money from you and I when we bought regular vehicles for 10-plus years. He sells these cars to consumers in large part based upon a view of everything carbon is terrible, okay? Never mind, by the way, that the only reason that pretty much everybody in the belt that got hit by the snow and stuff had lights during that storm was because Trump ordered the coal plants to stay online and killed the regs that would have forced them offline. Incidentally, for those who don't know, there was actually a negative, without the coal-fired plants, there was a negative demand deficit at the Northeast Interconnect, which meant they would have had to shut people off in the middle of this thing. All right. The only reason they had about a 4 gigawatt at maximum demand, they had about a 4 gigawatt surplus in terms of what they actually had available. But the only reason that they were able to provide power during that storm was because 20%, roughly 20% of the load that was available was being taken up by coal-fired plants, all of which were forced offline and would have been forced down by Biden's administration's rules. So all those people, there would have been thousands of frozen popsicles.
All right, before we
had that not
before
happened.
Before we launch into the Biden everything's his fault thing.
I didn't say it was his fault. I said this decision was.
Where do you get that?
I said this particular decision was functionally stupid, and it was on the back of other decisions made by both Obama and Biden administrations, which forced out of service the ability to use the gas in a gas pipeline as the drive energy for the pumps. They had to be electric. So as soon as you get an ice storm...
This stuff is the same.
I understand it, but as soon as you get an ice storm and the lines go down, you have no gas pressure.
Well, people have a tendency to... I don't know. I do it too, I suppose, sometime, and I try and kick myself if I do, but... You blame three coal plants here in Chicago over the last decade have gone under.
Yeah.
And I don't know where there's the federal rules on the coal, and you've gone through what's wrong in the coal and all the other stuff and how you could make them a hell of a lot cleaner.
It's fixable, yes.
But so somewhere along the line, now these are Commonwealth Edison. Now Commonwealth Edison did the, you know, the turkey trot here somehow and sold these plants to somebody else. So they weren't their plants anymore. And then Commonwealth Edison, I mean, I could rant on this for forever, but I won't because I have two great guests. Somehow or another, all three of these plants, now one of them is right in the middle of a neighborhood, so you know, I don't know about that one, but there's one down by, in Indiana, right on the border. There's not many people live there, there's some, but there's nothing, and plus it's tied into, it's a huge plant, tied into all the, you know, the power grid, the whole bit. The one in Pilsen, you know, maybe it did have its day. But it got to the point where, oh no, we're like 15 years behind in upgrading these places.
Yeah.
And now we're, you know, I don't know what president that goes back to, but how do you, when these things are all kind of incremental and Commonwealth Edison gets every friggin' rate, you know, raising rates they want, how all of a sudden could you be, oh man, in order to keep this place running, you know, pass first of all, it's not a new law. You knew it was coming for 10 years. Oh, by the way, we're $200 million behind. Well, how did you get that far? I mean, what are we doing here? I mean,
because Chief, we have, and this again, part of this is it's the same process that went on during COVID. Okay, it's exactly the same thing. It's just in a different area. It's exactly the same problem. The boogeyman is around the corner. Is going to eat your children.
Yeah.
All right. And the boogeyman in that case is that carbon-based fuels are the devil. You bastards want to destroy the earth. Da 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 da. Okay. The truth is that all human development and carrying capacity on this rock exist only because of carbon-based fuels.
I don't disagree with that.
And without them, this rock can carry a couple hundred thousand humans.
The way it worked out. Go ahead, Kevin.
No, you're good. Keep going.
What I'm saying is that, but when you look at the decision-making process, which both you guys love to do, you look at near the end of the thing, it wasn't the cleanup stuff that was causing the problem. It was the delay on this end. And, oh, by the way, selling it to somebody else, then all of a sudden they don't have the money. Commonwealth Edison the whole mechanism how it got to the end was just butt ugly.
Let's go back to, you know, some of the stuff that, you know, that the Trump administration people all across the board were talking about at Davos last week. The stupidity of it's a different decision being made, but it's the same thought process, and it's the stupidity of saying we're going net zero, but we don't make any of the stuff that that gets you to net zero. So now you have to buy all, you know, you make yourself beholden to China, where all of those kinds of wind power products are made, where, you know, I mean, you can go down the whole list. And we want to we don't want to burn coal, so we're going to burn natural gas, but we don't produce natural gas in Europe. We're going to get all our natural gas from Russia. So now you're beholden to Russia. It's the same stupidity, different, you know, different theme behind it, but it's the same kind of stupidity that is that Carl's describing for coal, that we don't want coal power, so we're gonna shut it all down. But we don't have an alternative. We don't have a good alternative.
Well, here's one of the things, Kevin. This is one of the problems, though, that comes with all this. Okay, and this also has driven all of this offshoring and the destruction of our manufacturing base and everything.
All of it, yeah.
All right, and that is, if you know, we in the United States, we came to the conclusion, due to the abject stupidity that we had here and the results. Okay, I grew up in a place where you couldn't eat the fish out of the river because they were full of poisons. All right, and that eating them would be a very bad idea.
The water, saw this episode.
The water was horrible.
Yeah,
right?
The three-eyed fish. Yep.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was full of PCBs and all kinds of other industrial crap that was just dumped into the water. Okay, with absolutely not a care in the world what happened to the people downstream from where you did the dumping. And then you get
your quarterly bonus. It was beautiful.
Well, and you know what? Every time I was in the car going somewhere, you drive past the chemical plant, your eyes water, right? I'm sure that stuff was really good for you. And maybe someday, you know, whatever exposure I took from that, maybe someday that'll get me. Okay, we decided as Americans we weren't going to put up with that crap. And we forced that to stop. So that very same river today and that very same chemical plant exist. They operate differently than they did then, as do all the people that used to dump all the crap in the water and all the people who used to spew all the crap in the air. But the plant still exists, the river still exists, the people still live there. And, oh, by the way, you can see the bottom of the river now. You can eat the fish, you can recreate in the water without worrying about getting all kinds of weird little things, you know, from skin conditions or whatever have you. And you don't smell anything when you go past the chemical plant, because we decided we weren't willing to destroy our
environment. The only problem is the we who cleaned it up are different than the we who dirtied it up.
No, hold on a minute, Chief. We didn't actually clean it up. What we actually did was we said, okay, you go run your coal-fired power plant over there in China. You go ahead and make the precursor chemicals over there in China, okay? And oh, by the way, we'll allow that material to be manufactured using the very same dirty, crappy, poisoned planet processes that were used here, because it's cheaper and sold here in the United States. And that is how the deindustrialization of this country happened. And that's the part of it that nobody will take on. I don't care if they're Democrat or Republican.
No, well,
but you know what? To this day, China has hundreds of coal-fired power plants under construction.
So does India.
Yeah, and by the way, they're not going to stop. and we're not going to sanction either one of those. Chief, one of the points I've made for decades is wage and environmental arbitrage parity tariffs are the instant fix but nobody will do it.
I have a question. There's a coal plant down in Indiana that I used to drive by all the time when we had rented the house in Ogden, or not in Michigan City.
Yeah.
Very clean, it appears to me. If we were to build a coal plant today, how clean would it be? Would it be to everybody's satisfaction or no?
Well, no, because this is what we've allowed to happen, okay? 80% of any problem is solvable at essentially zero cost. By the time we got to 2000, when it comes to automobiles, as an example, I have a 2002 truck sitting outside my driveway. My daughter has a 2003 van. Both of them have V8 Chevy pushrod 5.3 liter engines in them.
A Chevy bun.
Which, by the way, Chevy more or less perfected by about that point in time in terms of mechanical stability and things like this. Okay, I mean, is it as good as the Japanese stuff? No. But can you reasonably expect to get 200,000 miles out of those engines? Yes.
I'm not so sure I wouldn't put a Chevy 350 up against a Japanese engine. I think I might.
Well, I'm just saying, they really are well built, okay, in terms of the design. Chevrolet pretty much, now, you know, I mean, lately, okay. So anyway, here's the point.
Did anybody ever wear out a Ford 6, the straight 6?
Well, that's pretty tough to do too, right?
Yeah.
But here is the point of this. By that point in time, all right, if I take that truck and I start it and I let it warm up, so it's at operating temperature, and I go ahead and I try to kill myself with the carbon monoxide and hydrocarbon emissions out of the tailpipe, it's actually very hard to do.
You know, buy an older car.
Well, okay, yeah, because it has, because between the feedback fueling system with the fuel injection, the oxygen sensors, and the catalyst, very little of anything harmful comes out of the back end. Most of what comes out of the back end is carbon dioxide and water, and virtually nothing else.
Yeah, if you're going to kill yourself that way, you need a couple bottles of scotch.
Well, yeah, you just may as well just drink the booze, right? It's more likely to work. All right, so.
What was the TV show I was watching not that long ago where the guy went out and bought this old car, and somebody wondered why he bought it? He did it so he could commit suicide with it.
So he commits suicide, yeah, because with the newer ones, it's almost impossible. So anyway, but here's the reality of it, all right? Over the next 25 years, the ratcheting of additional requirements, all of which are expensive, all of which damage the reliability of the product. Okay, cylinder deactivation, low volume, multi-stage oil pumps, da 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 da. You're all chasing that last tenth of a mile a gallon because the standards ratchet higher and you get fined if you miss them. All right. You've now got engines in half-ton Chevy pickups where they have gone far enough that you're getting crankshaft and cam and valve train failures as a result of lubrication starvation at lower RPMs and load. And this is a direct result of these so-called standards. So you are now building vehicles that the manufacturer is literally shaving the corner to the point that if it gets past the powertrain warranty, that's fine. Now, you talk about an inflationary impact. Rather than having to buy one truck every 200,000 miles, I go 70,000 miles, which is out of warranty. The engine blows up, and it's $15,000 for another one.
Hey, Kevin, you think Carl has hacked my computer?
He could have. I know he's capable.
Because you might not know this, but the second half of the show, one of my topics for Carl, because I always have odd topics for Carl, is I actually watched a YouTube yesterday about the 12 worst pickup trucks. Now, you know I love pickup trucks.
Oh, God.
And this guy, it was about a 20-minute deal, Carl. I'm sitting there going, where's my buddy Carl? We should be sitting here drinking, having a drink, watching this. Every single new truck, according to this guy, sucks. And it's
they do.
And it's exactly what you're talking about. It's exactly what you're talking about. He went down the list. I mean, there was 12 trucks, so I'm going to try and get them together a little bit. I think it's the GM and the Chevy have a 10-speed transmission.
All of them are trash.
And the guy says they absolutely suck. He goes, you can't get the thing. It's shifting. The transmissions. One of them, the Dodge is $85,000, and he says it's got this computer thing where the things have got 12,000 miles. The guys are pulling trailers uphill, and the whole thing just stops. And you can't even open a window, or you can't even open a door.
Yeah. Well, one of the problems that, I mean, the 10-speed transmission issue is just simply too much crap in too small a can.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's not any more complicated than that. The clutching and band mechanisms, the number of them that have to go inside the case means that you have to make them smaller. They cannot take the load over time, and they self-destruct. And the entire problem is in the
One of them was the camshaft that you were talking about. The camshaft, and that was on the Fords, I think.
Well, it's happening on the GMs, the 6.2s as well.
Oh, the 6.2, right. That was the one, but then something was on the Fords.
The Fords having the same problem.
And then they were talking about the Toyotas. They said, remember when you could buy a Toyota? The thing ran for like 20 years, and you could sell it for what you bought it for? He goes, these things, they cost $85,000, and they're horrible.
Oh, the new ones are garbage. Hot garbage. Yeah. Well, and I mean, it's just the entire problem goes back to the fact, you know, if you take a coal-fired power plant, for example, and if you look at a modern one that's still running, you'll see there's a huge amount of what looks like smoke coming out of the smokestack. Okay? That's not smoke, it's steam. And the reason is that the way that you clean the first levels of how you clean these things up is you've got the exhaust coming out of the thing. You spray atomized water into there, which causes all of the crap that's in that smoke stream to precipitate out and fall to the bottom. All right. Well, of course, you know, the water evaporates, therefore you get steam. So you got this huge plume coming out of there. But it's, you know, it's the same thing with like a nuclear plant that's running. The cooling towers are you know, all kinds of steam. There's no radiation there. It's water. All right. But that's the, you know, the base way you clean these things up. The problem is that now, all right, so now I've gotten rid of 95%. Okay, or like with the 2000 car. You cleaned it up to the point that I can't even poison myself intentionally with it anymore.
Yeah. Right?
It does. It's not possible. And yet, that's not good enough. And so now you say, well, I want the last 2% of pollution out of there. Well, that's astronomically expensive.
Well, it's like, I think GM car now or truck, the base engine's a 4-cylinder.
Yeah, well, that's a mileage thing. And basically, you know, essentially, I mean, this is just mechanics. If I've got to move 8 pistons, it has more drag than moving 4 pistons.
Well, I get that part, but still, it's a...
But this is why the 4. Okay, the problem, of course, is that I am now working... I'm now causing that engine to work at a higher average load, which means it lasts for less time.
Well, that's right. But I mean, but this there seems to be there's a
the ultimate point is not how it works, not, you know, not the malfunctions. It's that we've created this religion that says we are going to die unless we squeeze that last 1 or 2% out of here.
And it's a lie.
It's a total lie, and there is no economic justification behind it. But you don't need it. But if you're going to die, if it's going to kill us, we don't need economic justification. We just go with it.
Well, and it's the same. But the same thing happened during COVID.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, if you do not stay at least 6 feet away from other people, everyone's going to die. The truth.
5 feet, 10 inches, though, it's going to get you.
That's 5'11". Okay, 5'11" and a half. All right. Or the other one that I always loved was, you have to wear a mask into the restaurant, but obviously you have to take it off to eat. Oh, by the way, contaminating the table is not a problem.
Well, I don't know if I ever had a whole lot of respect for Harvard in the first place, but I had absolutely zero. You guys ran. Somehow I couldn't find it afterward. This is where I need someone at Carl's Jeans somewhere. I found a report online regarding the airlines had commissioned Harvard to do a report on whether you could sit in a plane during the COVID part.
Oh, yeah.
So there was an original study done, 1920s, by Harvard regarding tuberculosis.
Right.
And they came up with you had to be, was it 3 feet or six, whatever it was. And they did not as thing for the COVID. They actually came out and said you were better off in a plane sitting next to somebody with the HVAC system in the plane than you are that you could be closer to somebody in the plane than you could walking down the street. I'm sitting there reading this going, what manner of moron could believe this?
By the way, my daughter and her boyfriend over the holidays drove out to Vegas because there was a cat they were rescuing. Got on a plane, flew back, okay, with the cat. By the way, cat's really sweet, older, and nice thing that they did.
They couldn't find a cat between here and Vegas?
It belonged to someone that.
I get it.
Right. Okay. So anyway, but they rescued a sweet old cat that was maybe going to end up in the pound, and he really is very sweet. I like him a lot. In the seat in front of Sarah was a kid, maybe 12, who was hacking along the entire flight.
Happens. Yeah, this whole downtown area here a week ago, you couldn't walk down the sidewalk without hearing a stereo.
Well, I'm just saying, hacking along the entire flight, and both of them got the flu that he had. Okay.
That'll teach him to do a good deed.
Yeah, that'll teach him to do a good thing. So, they both, a couple days later, went down with it. Now the interesting part of this is that, I hang around these guys, on occasion. And this very same bug attempted to get me a few days after I was exposed by them. And 99% failed. And that is largely because, I believe, I went through and did my own research, and I have a prophylactic thing, specifically vitamin D in the wintertime, because I get outside a lot in the summer. But nobody does in the winter, because even if you're outside, you got jackets on and everything else, right? So you get nothing. And my Garmin says, yes, this thing did try to assault you, and I had a little bit of a scratchy throat for a few days, but no fever. It could be your old.
You had it before,
Chief. Historically speaking, okay, over my entire life from a teenager forward, one or two material upper respiratory infections would get me every year. I have not had one since I adopted this. Not one.
Well,
what are the statistical odds that that's not from what I changed?
You've never been in a Petri dish, except maybe in steerage if you were in the Army, than you would have been in the OEX pit with 350 people. Nobody, I don't care if you had advanced TB, you're going to be in there because you paid for your seat that day.
I get it, okay? The other thing is, remember, I raised a daughter alone, and guess what? Every kid on the planet is a germ factor.
Oh, gotcha, yeah.
Okay, and they go to school, and then they bring everything home, whatever it is that they have. So, yeah, I mean, it's...
If it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger, right?
Well, I'm still here. But this is, this was the thing that I, during the start of COVID, what I pointed out is that, there was a small little outbreak among ordinary people up in Minnesota. And it was reported as a cluster of infections. This was when it was just getting started. And I wrote up a thing and I said, these people have refused to lock in the caregivers at the hospitals, because these were people who are going to the hospital and the physician's offices until they've seroconverted, until they've had the infection and have a positive antibody test. And I said, in 2 weeks from now, there's going to be an explosion of cases there. And all of it is going to have been spread into the population by the doctors, the nurses, and the janitors in the hospital that got it and took it home.
And
that's exactly what happened.
We're going to shift gears to the market a little bit, but one of my clients, they're big in the nursing home business. Interesting group. But a lot of the people who work in the nursing homes, they also work in hospitals during the day, and they come in and
they go back and forth.
So not only, I think I remember the name of the hospital, but I'm not positive, I'm not going to say it was in New York, they would have people treating the COVID people.
Yeah.
And then without changing clothes or anything or showering up, would have them go upstairs like and work in the cancer wards.
They did the same crap out in Seattle. You know, Kirkland, the nursing home out there, the same crap.
Well, this guy says that one guy came from the hospital, still in his scrubs.
Yeah.
And he infected 44 people in one night.
Well,
you know what was weird about this? We've kind of gone through this before, but something that, you know, and I read an awful lot about this, not as much as you, but maybe it was because it was a man-made disease, and I guess I can say that now. It was different than virtually any other disease. Some people were incredible spreaders, and some people weren't. And I don't think anybody's really explained that.
Actually, that's fairly common for coronaviruses.
Really?
There was a pandemic in the late 1890s that at the time, we don't have any tissue samples because there was no preservation back then. We didn't have formaldehyde and all that stuff. However, the genetic backdating. So one of the interesting things about viruses is that you can backdate essentially when they first showed up from the genetic patterning. And this is one of the reasons I knew it had been that it didn't just originate in one place and spread outward. Because as soon as it started, looking at that patterning showed a number of things that absolutely couldn't have happened naturally. Okay, it's impossible.
Well, plus they couldn't find the animal. The last time they found it went through a camel in like 4 days.
It wasn't, and then I had noted during the shopping season before it started that there were what looked like an organized Chinese theft ring that was testing all the electronics in Walmarts across multiple states. Maybe they actually were rubbing snot on the keys of the keyboards of all the computers. That was what they were doing. They weren't trying to steal them. I don't know. But
I'd rather not think that was true.
Yeah.
Well, it might have been, because the pattern matched, right? Than what later happened. So I mean, but there was, there were things like, the outbreak in Italy, and then the West Coast of the United States. It's just when you looked at the genetic sequence.
Well, the outbreak in Italy was because of Milan, and the people in Milan fly back and forth to Wuhan.
I get that, but I'm just saying the timing on the different strains was wrong for an organic disease. Okay, the organic spread. So anyway, but the point of this is that there is a coronavirus called OC43 that circulates today. It causes mostly mild colds and respiratory infections. Once in a while, it whacks somebody, but not very often. And in that, by genetic backdating, happens to almost exactly line up with the pandemic that did happen in the 1890s. And by the way, it went through the same pattern that we had with COVID, in that there were three major waves of serious infection and death, and then it calmed down, and it slowly over the years turned into the annoyance that it is today. But it never went away. Okay, it still circulates today. And COVID went through, even though we took all these countermeasures and did all these things, the pattern between those two viruses is almost, if you overlaid one on top of the other, you'd swear they were the same.
Well, you mentioned, I want to get to the markets here because things are crazy here.
Yeah.
Very early on in this, one of my listeners, one of our listeners from, I don't know where it was from, UK maybe, because I was getting all my information from UK. We have listeners in the UK and all the way better research over there than we ever saw here. I mean, because here, like Kevin said, it was all politically tainted one side or the other.
Yeah.
And somehow or another, they...
It was all politically tainted one side.
Well, yeah, I mean...
There wasn't another.
There was...
And I don't necessarily mean political in terms of party political.
It was just somehow the drug companies got involved and it was it was basically a bleep show. I think we all agree on that. But somehow these guys in Korea found some kid who had just gotten exposed. When I say kid, he was a late teen. So they somehow locked this guy up for like 2 weeks and he wasn't happy. And they charted the whole thing. The kid never really had a symptom, maybe a skosh of a symptom. He said he would have gone and played basketball every day, but they charted it. And the weird part, you mentioned about your daughter getting a disease, They said the guy got to the point where for a day or two he was so contagious.
Yeah.
But the second he got like a slight cough or something, the minute he knew he had it, he wasn't contagious anymore.
He wasn't contagious anymore, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that makes coronavirus, it's one of the things that makes viruses in general so damnable, in that bacteria reproduce in a binary fashion. One becomes 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, whatever. Viruses are exactly the opposite. Viruses are exponential replicators. So you have one viral particle that gets into a cell and takes it over. And the minimum number you need to have is basically the minimum infectious dose. And for most viruses, it's quite low. Once you have that dose, the size of the dose beyond that is completely irrelevant. And the reason is that the first cell in your body that actually gets infected makes 10,000 copies. So if you have an infective dose, if you got one viron that manages to get in, or 100 viron, 100 times the dose, the outcome is exactly the same, because after one extra cycle, which is measured in a few hours, you're in exactly the same place. So the difference in progression is immaterial, whether you have a little bit of an exposure or you have a huge exposure. And that was one of the reasons that masks could never work.
Well, Carl, wasn't the stats like 90% of the people were infected by 10% of the people, or something bizarre like that?
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that happens, is that your body, once it starts reacting, you are probably beyond the point at which you are effectively expelling the stuff into the air and getting other people. Okay, and obviously the stuff that's in your body, it doesn't leave, doesn't harm anybody else. Okay. The other thing that was astounding to me was nobody paid any attention to the study that came out of Iran, where they had all these people in the hospital that were getting it really bad, and they couldn't find any of the active virus on those people's tray tables, but it was all over the bathrooms. Guess what orifice it was coming out of?
Yeah, well, some of the colleges were testing the sewers to find out if people in college had it.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Because by the way, that's exactly how polio spreads.
I don't know if I'd want to be that guy.
Well,
hey, go test those five portalettes, see if anybody's got the virus.
It's a crappy job. Let's just put it that way.
Hey, we got market stuff going on here.
Yeah,
folks, I got to drop off, so I will. I will listen to the rest of this on the archive, but otherwise, you guys have a good weekend, and I will I'll see you all online next week.
If we practice, if we talk about you, we'll be nice.
Trash me. Go ahead.
No, we will.
I appreciate that.
All right. What's the progression here, Carl? We had yesterday about 9 o'clock. I was just going on a show with Joel. All of a sudden, the two of us are getting on the show, scrambling to find out. Bitcoin took a dump, gold took a dump, silver took a dump, the market took a dump, and now we're kind of sort of doing the same thing. When we've got silver and gold flying down, but is Bitcoin the problem here, a symptom? What is causing this all of a sudden?
So I did a lot of digging into this over the last day or so, because there's a pattern here that I've seen before, and I really don't like it. It's an especially evil pattern. The last time I saw it in this kind of a way was in Asia, and it was the early part of the dislocation that showed up over there in 2007, in the first couple months. And it was, in fact, what prompted me to start writing my column. Okay, sorry, that's...
Are you talking about the Indonesia thing last night?
What prompted me to start digging into the market in detail and trying to figure out where it came from was in the very early part of 2007. There was a monstrous dislocation in Asia, but nobody seemed to be able to understand why. Okay, so there was no like, this company blew up or this bank blew up, or but obviously something blew up, because there was a huge sell-off with no obvious cause.
We had a client.
Well, and it was
not to interrupt, but we had a client who was involved in one of the early Bear Stearns thing, and I should have realized that when that blew up.
Well, this was Chief. This was 6 months before that.
But this was I'm going to say almost a year before it was recognized.
Right, right. But, yeah. but the two hedge funds that blew up were in the summer of 2007. Okay.
This was a off-balance sheet Bear Stearns thingy.
Right, right. This was before the big Bear Stearns kaboom boom. This was the two little hedge
almost funds. Almost a year. I was going to say 10 months.
Well, but that was, but that was the summer of 2007 when those blew. This was the spring. This was like March.
Okay.
Okay. And that was what led me to dig into things, and that was when I found WAMU that was paying dividends out of capitalized interest and, you know, all other kinds of hinky crap all over the banking system. And said, uh-oh.
And those guys are still all over the place. They're still okay.
I know, but that was, you know, that was when I started, you know, sounding the alarm on it, right? The bells start going off. So
for those who don't remember, WAMU was Washington Mutual.
Yes. And they were not the only ones. They were just, but they were the subject of one of my first columns because, you know, they were one of the first ones to report earnings, and therefore, you know, you go through the quarterly and there you are. But what we had in this instance is that, first off, we've had Bitcoin and other related cryptocurrencies that have really taken a header over the last few months. Okay, up and down a little bit, but the general, you know,
I've never asked you, but I will actually.
Well, direction of the chart is from the upper left to the lower right, which is bad.
I asked Russell at one time when Bitcoin was up at 120 at its all those things were at their peak. He estimated that the amount of wealth in the whole mess, the whole crypto area was roughly $3 trillion. Right. And now with a couple of the Dogecoins went down and the Bitcoin, that number's got to be down to a little under two. So there's a trillion that's, quote, of what was on people's sheets at one point. Now, they didn't pay for it there, but there's a trillion. If we all would have bought at the top, we're down $1 trillion. Now, if it goes another trillion, is that going to leave a mark on the rest of the market? I think the answer to that is yes.
Well,
but I don't know how much. I have no idea how to figure out how much.
Okay, so here's the danger that I see in just from what I've been able to analyze out of it so far. And again, I can't track flows accurately enough. The Fed can, but they're not going to.
They're not going to, and they're not interested.
Well, they may know internally where it is, but they're not. They're certainly not going to release it.
To us, somebody's going to.
Well, believe me, Citibank probably has it, right? Goldman probably has it. You don't, and you're not going
some
to
of the
get
thieves,
it.
Some of the thieves in the White House and other places, I'm sure, have it.
They very well may have it, but I guarantee you and I are not going to get it. All right? I think there is a good chance that most of this spike in gold and silver over the last 6 months or so has come out of rotation out of the cryptos.
I think you're probably right about that.
Now, if that's true, then you are seeing the start of the consequence of the pin having found the balloon. And the other problem is that the other place that this has gone in spades especially over the last 6 months has been into anything that can loosely be correlated with so-called AI in the chip and lower level infrastructure. You know, SanDisk,
read Micron up another 18 today.
SanDisk, okay, yeah. Micron. Now, all of this activity in terms of the AI guys turning around and forward buying up capacity when they don't have the actual utilization, nor is there any reasonable way for them to come up with it, because you can't put the buildings up fast enough and you can't serve them because there's no power to actually bring them online. If somehow you could wave a magic, you know, this is the, we need not one magic wand, we need four or five, right? You need the first one that you have to be able to wave to actually put the building up that fast. And then you need the second one because the chips that are going to go in the building don't exist. So you have to wave the magic wand to get the chips. Then you have to wave it again to get the electricity. And you have to wave it again to get the power to cool it. Okay, I mean, you know, there's all these magic wands. And, oh, by the way, after you do all this, there's no money flowing back in the other direction from people who want to buy it sufficient to pay for all that crap. Even on an amortization schedule, you can't make the interest payments. All right? So if you borrow the money, you can't make the interest payments.
Well, these moves, I mean, just, I mean, well, Carl's so talking in the general sense here very well, by the way. But we're talking about a $14 move in silver. We're talking about what's the contract? 25,000 ounces?
Yeah. It's now, the problem with this is, and I actually saw mention of this yesterday, which I thought was interesting, because on CNBC, which almost never actually says anything makes any sense, they actually had a little segment up where they were talking about the meteoric rise of silver, and specifically silver, and put it up and showed that there is a demand destruction problem that is, if it hasn't started yet, it is going to, in that silver is a heavily industrially used metal for building all these chips. Now, that in turn means that this sort of thing is going to go directly into cost of goods sold on the chip side.
Now, digging a little bit, I have an acquaintance who owns a bunch of metal recycling facilities, and he talks about the incredible amount of copper he has, and also you get a bunch of gold.
Right.
He's never mentioned silver.
It's in there.
Where?
It's silver to some extent. Well, so, you know, when you dig ore out of the ground for, you know, you're targeting a thing, right? But there is other stuff in there.
There's a quarter ounce of gold in every computer like I have sitting on my desk, or an eighth of an ounce. But there's a lot of copper. Never once has mentioned that he has any silver.
Well,
I thought it was mostly used for film.
Well, it originally was.
Yeah.
Okay, but not anymore.
But what can I produce without silver? I guess my question.
All electronics.
Okay.
In today's world. Now, that's because we banned the use of lead-bearing solder internationally. Not just here, but internationally. Anything any electronic component that is going to come into a first world country. I mean, you probably can still use lead-bearing solder on electronics in China, but the problem is the product then can't be exported into the United States or the EU. And the reason that they did this is that an awful lot of that stuff, you know, I mean, if you think about just white goods, okay, you know, your dryer has a computer board in it, right, that does the timer now, because nobody makes mechanical timers anymore, right?
Which only worked for like 100 years, so you wouldn't want to...
I mean, why would you want something that never breaks, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, nobody would ever want that. So those things end up getting trashed, and when they do, a substantial part of that ends up leaching into the groundwater through the soil. All right, that's bad. And lead is a serious problem in terms of contamination. So the Rose standards eliminated that. It's one of the places I can argue both sides of that, you know, whether a recycling stream would have made more sense, you know, forced recycling stream, because, you know, I mean, we do that with starting batteries for cars, for example, and you pay a deposit when you buy a starting battery.
Audrey just ponied up for a battery for a car. They said because she has all this electronics, the battery was $350.
Somebody bent her over the table on that one, I think.
But, well, I mean, it was kind of, the guy did some other stuff, but still, I mean, I went online and they said these batteries actually do cost like $275.
Well, so
they're not a regular battery. I mean, what's different about them?
Well,
plus they only last 2 years, 3 years.
Well, there's also a huge scam with that too, Chief, in that the manufacturers have come up with this thing called an EFB, which is a flooded battery, has, you know, liquid acid in it, like the one that you probably have in your truck, the one that I have in my truck. However, they are designed for much higher cycling loads, and these cars that have the start stop stuff and things like that on them have those.
Yeah.
All right. The problem is this: what they don't tell you is they want you to buy these EFB things. They're a little expensive. For about the same money, you can put an AGM in there, which is sealed, non-spillable. They last a little bit longer than the EFBs do in that service. However, they are wildly superior in terms of power delivery.
These are the solid ones?
They're not actually solid. They're AGM's absorbed glass mat, so they still have the liquid electrolyte in them, but it's a saturated glass, kind of like a fiberglass material that's inside them instead of being just plates. I have one in my Mazda, and they're also, before all the lithium stuff became popular, they were also the choice, the right choice really for things like RVs.
Well, Carl, I've got the GDX, which we have a lot of for clients.
Yeah.
And we managed to protect most of it. We probably could have got a couple extra puts here. I think it was 113 yesterday. Now it's 99.50.
Yeah, silver. I think you need to be very careful, Hill, because I see evidence. Like I said, I see evidence here of a dislocation. I don't know exactly where it's coming from, but the funding for this last crank higher in metals appears to have been coming out of crypto. And the problem is that the pump's failing because the sell-off is pretty much across all of the different equity classes.
Yeah, except for a couple of stocks.
Yeah, it's not in It's not in one or two places. It's everywhere.
Well, we have this going on. And silver was, I'm going to say it was 112. Now it's under 90. $15 move. It's a 15% move and something like that. That's. Carl, I've been long this stuff for 5 years. If it moved a dollar in a year, it was a good year.
Yeah, yeah.
What I saw the Apple stuff last night. Apple was up, I don't know if it made it up 10 bucks. It was up like 950, 975. Now it's down 20 cents. What bloom came off the rose in Apple's after the announcements?
Well, this is basically, I mean, when you get down to it, with this, all of this multiple expansion that you're seeing, is based upon something that is absolute, unequivocal bullcrap.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean,
all right, and this is, there is, you know, the rumblings are starting. There's companies that are coming out and saying, well, you know, yeah, we still love this, because you say AI is a complete piece of crap, but it's a dead letter, and your stock price is going to crash instantly, right? So you're not hearing that, but it will come in the form of, hey, wait a minute, where's the cash flow, the free cash flow from this, and right now you're on the tail end of companies that are still getting huge price spikes by saying we're building out the AI. Right, I mean, you look
AI,
at like,
AI,
yeah, but I mean, like, you know, you look at, you know, Meta reports, and you know, you get this really nice gap up, right, on the report.
Well, Ratchet, your CNBC back 7 years, cloud,
right.
Ratchet back 12 years or 15 years, China,
right, and the problem with that is that. Those gaps are not driven by today's earnings. They're driven by tomorrow's expectations. And the reality of it is that out of all the companies that are doing the AI stuff today, zero of them have an operating profit on an amortized basis. None. All right. The only people who are actually doing it are the Levi's of the world.
When we come back from break, let's figure out who exactly. I mean, I guess I'm using it a little bit. I mean, not so much as other people. SP Futures now down 45. It's not looking good. It's getting worse. NASDAQ Futures down 203. Now, we were down huge yesterday and came back. I think the S&P was down well over 100 and came back to being, I'm going to say, only down 50. Well, I don't think we're at yesterday's lows yet, but it looks like we're heading that way, doesn't it?
We're headed in that general direction, yeah.
We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Low North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. S&P futures down 36. Nasdaq futures down 178. We're down, not saying by the lows of yesterday, but we're nearing that. We've got big sell-offs in the gold and silver areas. Let's say over in Europe, we've got the DAX is actually up 213.9%. I don't know where that's coming from. FTSE up 47.5%. CAC around up 57.7%. Adidas shares up 6% after record annual revenue. So happy for them. Not so sure I'm going to go out and buy it or shoot it. Now, Nikkei's down 52. Call that flat. Hang Seng down 580. This is what Carl was talking about a little bit, because it started in Indonesia. They were down like 7% 2 days ago. The head of the stock exchange resigned, which is even more bizarre. Shanghai down 41. It's a full 1%. Oil down 32 cents. Not much going on in the oil patch. 65.10 still way up from the $57 of a couple of weeks ago. Gold, here's a gold down 265, 5,052. I'm going to say this traded like 5,600 yesterday and had a big turn during the day. Silver down 14 bucks, $100.31. Foreign exchange, the euro is over 119. A lot of that is coming from here, too. Again, we'll get to Carl's view on this. British pound, 137. Euro was under, was like 116.5 2 weeks ago. That's, you know, 2% moves in dollars is massive amounts of money. I know I can't get anybody to believe that, but it's true. Bitcoin down 1,356, 82,575. They were over 100, I'm going to say, last week as well. This stuff's crazy. Ricky, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Weather hasn't changed. Cold. Hey.
Good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:33 a.m. here in Chicago. 12 degrees right now with a high of 21 with a couple of snow showers today. Tonight, cloudy, breezy, and quite cold with a low of 11 degrees. We might have some snow tonight as well. Phoenix, Arizona, 49 degrees right now with a high of 76. Mostly sunny and nice today. And tonight will be clear with a low of 45 degrees. Let's talk about traffic real quick. There's a road closure westbound on Eisenhower due to an overturned truck that may be leaking fuel. This happened between exit 18 and exit 17, backed up all the way to exit 21B Harlem Avenue. Expect delays of up to 30 minutes if you're coming outbound on Eisenhower. Another accident reported southbound on Stevenson at Central Avenue, exit 285, but I don't have a lot of info on that yet. Edens looks pretty clear, and there's some mild to some spots of stop and go traffic in both Dan Ryan and Kennedy inbound. Sports real quick, this coming Tuesday, we got the Pro Bowl game, NFC versus AFC at 7 p.m. at Moscone Center in San Francisco. For the NHL, the Blackhawks yesterday lost to Penguins 6-2, but today they have a chance for redemption as they play the Blue Jackets home at in Blackhawks at the United Center. Lastly, NBA, Bulls lose to Pacers 110-113, and Suns beat Pistons 114-96. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back to you.
So, Kyle, we're kind of losing on all fronts here. I mean, with what happened in Microsoft, and that's one of our biggest holdings, well, thank God for puts, $60, you know, that's a big move, and the straddle was 24, so let's say it surprised the street, surprised the markets. Apple, the straddle was $10. I thought that was a little light, and it was up $10 last night. Now it's dead flat, so I kind of wish we'd have done something in there. I'm kicking myself for not having a few extra puts in this GDX and silver. What's the matter with me? It looks obvious now, doesn't it?
No, well, yeah. I mean, I you know, there's a bunch of people on my, you know, on my forum that are are metalheads. I think the quote is, "I love the shiny."
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, you know, you have, and I really hope you didn't buy silver up over 100 because. You probably go need to get some tux for that.
Yep.
But this is the problem with parabolic moves like this, Chief, is that everybody, you know, that the common thing that's been flying around is it's all about monetary reset. The dollar is about to fall apart and go to zero. Da da da. Do you remember that crap being run back in 2008?
Well, yeah.
Was it true? Ultimately,
well, I mean, you have a chance to.
I didn't ask whether or not, you know, we had serious internal, you know, consternation kind of, you know, level problems in 2008. Obviously, we did. Duh. You know, the stock market took quite a header, eh?
Well, I will lob one maybe a little more severe at you. Is back in, well, 80 when I started on the floor. Or back in the 70s when I was doing the inflation work for Pullman.
Right.
I mean, you looked at your short-term rate where Grandma Carl was going to the savings and loan and getting 15%, you know,
right.
and the short-term rate was 15.5%. The
right.
long-term rate, the 30-year never, I don't think, ever got above 12.5%. So,
right.
You can say your curve was upside down, or whatever, what's the term when the near term is higher than the other one? It was negatively sloping curve, but really the logical explanation was somewhere, somebody in the next 30 years is going to come to his senses and fix this, right? I mean, isn't that the layman's explanation of that curve? Pretty much.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's the thing is that when you look at these kinds of events, all right, I can make a pretty clean argument that our government declared war on us as U.S. citizens 30 plus years ago.
I was going to say 2000 and accentuated in 2008.
Well, literally declared war on us.
Yeah.
Okay. The reality of this situation is that the difference between strangling you slowly and strangling you fast is simply time, right? And the other element is that the only difference between sex and rape is consent. They are both the same physical act. The problem here is that if you have a system, the political and economic system that is, you know, allegedly, you know, as Kudlow likes to say, free markets are the best path to prosperity.
He's so full of, never mind.
Free market where, right?
Saloons, haircuts, where else? Agriculture maybe, and then where else?
If I don't like the price at the local neighborhood bar, I can go down the street to the next one. And it, you know, I'm likely to have a different price,
yep.
Right? And it may be for a different beer. However, it's for a comparable product. They're both beer. Maybe one's Budweiser, and I don't care for that so much. But you know, I mean, that,
you know, I've never liked Budweiser.
I'm just saying, neither have I. I always thought it was garbage. But you know, when you're broken,
I think
college,
it's because it has rice in it. It's a different taste or something.
It is. It's a rice beer. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is that there is an element of choice, right? When you have the kind of cartel behavior, I mean, you just take two examples out, and there's hundreds, but you just take two for example, the 8 U.S.C. 1324 stuff, all right, and then the 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1 stuff. One in relationship to illegal immigration, and the second one in relationship to what's 20% of our economy. The healthcare system. Both of those are federal felonies. The executive, every single federal officer in the executive, in the armed services, in the judiciary, all federal officers, and in the state, at the state level, state officers is something very similar, but at the federal level, there's actually a law that states that prescribes the oath of office they have to take. Okay, the actual text of the oath is prescribed by law. The president's different, but everybody else, same oath. There is nowhere in the Constitution that permits an executive or judiciary to completely ignore titles and chapters within federal code.
Well, except the code's 9 zillion pages. Everybody chooses what they want to do.
But it doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is this, Chief. The way this works, in a representative Republican form of government, which I remind you, the Constitution guarantees
to every American. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we know how well that actually works out, right? But what's guaranteed to the American citizen is a Republican form of government. In a Republican form of government, not GOP Republican, Republican as a type of government, not as a political party, what's guaranteed in a Republican form of government is that the people, through a democratic process, elect representatives, a legislature, the legislature passes or repeals laws,
But they never repeal them, it doesn't appear.
Well, the executive either confirms them, signs them, or vetoes them, which then they can be overridden, whatever have you. But the ultimate authority for that body of law does not rest in the executive. It rests in the legislature, and therefore it rests in the people, because we're the ones that send those people to Congress.
Well, used to do that in Germany until they voted themselves out.
Well, I get that, okay? Now, the problem that you have is this. There is a corrective process built into the Constitution and built into federal code for those members of the government who refuse to execute upon their oaths as required, and that's impeachment and removal. All right. Well,
you're talking about the same people didn't do their job in the first place.
They've refused to do that too. All right.
Hey, can I ask you a serious economic question? And this is one I've been trying to ask, and I'm thinking somehow if I could put you and Hal in a room and lock you there for 2 weeks, maybe the two of you could come up. What is, I won't say wrong, I keep going back to the 77 through 81, well, actually it was 68 through 81 fiasco. You had explosion of the money supply, sort of like we did, not even as bad as COVID, by the way. So right. It was roughly about the same over a 10-year period as we had here. Now here, this time, and I'm going to lob the numbers out there and people can take their own conclusions. In 1980 something or 79, your interest rates, which are by any kind of formula, by anybody, of course, anybody have any formulas anymore, the nominal rate is supposed to be the real rate of interest. How much is it actually going to cost to borrow money from Carl for a year and use it? There should be a cost because, by the way, it's Carl's money. If I can build a building and make money at it, I need to pay him for the use of his money, just like...
Well, and it should always, in anywhere in the curve, be above the rate of actual inflation.
Right, say the real rate of inflation or real rate of interest for millennium has been somewhere between 3%. Well, I mean, if you...
And on the short end, that's true. As you go out further, it's a little higher.
Okay, but I'm saying get rid of the inflation risk out of it. I'm saying, if you're a caveman and you borrowed 100 stones from a guy, he wants 103 at the end of the year, basically.
That's
about how far it goes. But on top of that, you have to say, okay, what are you lending me? I'm lending you dollars. Well, are the dollars going to be worth the same at the end of the year, which the answer should be yes, but of course it hasn't been for God knows how long. And if I say, oh, no, the dollar is going to be worth 90% of what it's worth now, you add that to the 3%, and your nominal rate should be 13. This is not genius, okay? So now back in the 60 through 82 phenomenon or fiasco, this worked out terrifically. When I say terrifically, it worked out as you would expect. That you would have your short-term rates were 15. My mom could go down and get 15 or 13 or 12, whatever it was. It essentially, and the inflation rate was about 12.5.
Right.
And guess what? You were getting back on your money roughly what the formula said you were going to get. Right. Now, because the cost of capital was that high, people also demanded that in dividends. You didn't buy an Elon Musk company and maybe he'll give you a dividend 10 years from now. You know, the whole mentality was different. I mean, if I would have won the lotto, for instance, $1 million, and you said, "All right, I'll give it to you in 10 years," you almost said, "Keep it," because what would at 12 or 15%? What's it worth today?
Yeah,
$300,000 maybe. I mean, it's still, I wouldn't say keep it, but I mean, what's it worth? Like, you know, next to nothing, relatively. Well, now this time somehow we've inflated the place the same way, but somehow between the Fed putting $7 trillion on the balance sheet, they essentially stopped people from getting the return they should have gotten. If your grandma put $1 million in the bank 8 years ago, I'm saying right now that $1 million is worth $550 to $600 compared to what it was worth when she put it in there 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And somehow our people, like Carl was just saying, have gotten totally screwed this time. Now my question is, how exactly were they able to pull it off and they're still doing it? I mean, it's one thing to lie about the CPI. But is it because the banks are now a cartel and they all decided they weren't going to pay any interest? There weren't any savings and loans that could compete? How is it a bank can keep your interest rate at 1% for 4 years, the inflation rate is 8.
Well,
I mean, so what I cannot. I notice this difference more than most people because I lived through both of them. I can't understand how the hell they pulled it off. I have no idea.
Well, the way they,
and who's the they? I mean,
well, yeah, boy, be careful, you don't use the wrong word there. You'll get black.
Well, but hey, this is not Republican Democrat. This is wealth builders versus other people.
Oh, I understand that. Okay,
but how did they do it? How did they do it?
By fraud.
But I mean, there's people I know went to grad school, for God's sake. And I'd say, you know, the $1 million your mom had in the bank and got 1%, what's it worth now? What do you mean? It didn't make enough interest, but it's worth $1.1 million. I go, no, it's not.
Yeah, go try to buy a car with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's the biggest thing, but what you hear, you know, and this is, Chief, we, including people like you and I, you want to talk about where the failures come from, it's come from there. Okay. The idea that, for example, a house is an asset. It is absolutely not an asset. It is a consumer durable good.
It's the only product that we know of, maybe you can throw a couple in there, that is both a consumption good and an investment good.
But that's only because we have allowed the fraud to permeate into there. All right? And look, we all know if you buy a car and you stick it out in the driveway and you perform no maintenance, you never wash it, you never shine it, you never da-da-da-da-da-da, it turns into a pile of literal rust dust. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, it may take quite a while,
especially with the salt all over the place up here now.
Well, it may take a while to happen, but it will happen, right? The same thing happens with a house.
Mentality is totally different.
How many small towns, old places, go out, you know, go drive out, to ski out west, and go, you know, take the back roads instead of just the freeway, and you know, go through these places. How many collapsed structures that, you know, where no maintenance was done to them, and over the space of 20, 30 years, oh, look, it's a pile of sticks. And the thing is, but this is, you know, a so-called asset is, entropy is not a suggestion. We stop teaching people the basics of physical fact, and we created this aura around, it's artificial intelligence, it's a computer.
Carl, I have conversations with people that are lawyers and other people 2-3 nights a week. Somehow or another, they don't know the economics that I learned in my first class.
Yes, and you know what? Their heads are filled with mush by a group of people who are bribed. I mean, you look at, why has there not been a all-on, no-bullshit revolt over what has happened when it comes to medical care? Right? A no-bullshit
revolt. Because people don't feel they pay for it with the insurance. They think that their employer pays for it, and then the insurance pays for the other stuff, and they're out of the loop.
And by the way, you can go into a place, if you know, you go in there and you say, well, you know, I need an MRI. Do you have insurance? And I have insurance. It's $250.
Yeah.
Okay. You have insurance, it's $700.
Or what do you mean? Northwestern's $6,000.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
And by the way, your copay is, you know, $500, you know, whatever it is.
But
right?
But you mentioned, if you don't mind, I'll go back to
but
you.
Here's the, but here's the point, though, Chief. What do you think happens to the $6,000 charge? It makes your premiums go up by 15%.
Oh, without a doubt.
Next year.
You and I know that.
Well, okay. Yeah. So how is it? And this activity, by the way, has been illegal for over 100 years, and it was ruled to apply to the medical system in 1979.
And it would be ruled that way again today.
Well,
yeah.
Okay, and yet not one indictment.
But
not one.
Okay, but
and these are not civil offenses. Right, these are 10 years in prison.
The thing, the one kind of issues that we don't have, even though you're hard to agree with, we agree on a lot of stuff. And the part that I always wonder there, we kind of disagree on, is once it gets out of the vernacular, your politics responds to, I'm not saying now it responds all the crap on the internet, but it always responds to pressure from people. I mean, we had gangland slang that wasn't alive in Chicago in the 20s and 30s. One day these assholes decided to go a little too far, and they had the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Right. And everybody goes, wait a minute.
That's enough of that.
That's enough of that. So, I mean, this sort of, like, what does Kevin always say? It happens a little bit at a time, then all of a sudden.
Right.
I mean, you're right about the laws. You're right about the fact that people are supposed to enforce the laws. But what we're missing is there's 2 million laws, 1.9 million of which we could do without, probably, and yet we don't. And so somehow or another, there's this, I don't think, other than the people who love listening to the show, and I think there are a lot, other than the people here, you're never going to get some sort of a public outcry, unless you and I somehow got on national TV somehow, about antitrust stuff in the medical industry. Nobody even knows what the hell we're talking about, let alone is outraged about it. They're outraged about something, but they don't know.
Well, yeah, and but the thing is this, okay? If you want to take a look at the sociological impact of this over time, all right? Demographics is destiny. You can't do anything about it. And, oh, by the way, if you decide to change the incentives and you change the system, it takes 20 years for it to show up in the economy, because that's how long it takes to grow a child.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, you can't make it take 1 year by screwing 20 women.
Right.
Okay.
By the way, that was a quote from my.
I know, yeah. you said it around, okay? But you're absolutely right. You can't all of a sudden make it a 20th of the time by sleeping with 20 girls. So, the thing is, we have baked this into the cake on a forward basis. You and I, if we changed all of this today. If I could wave a magic wand and change all of this today, throw every one of these SOBs in prison, and by the way, you wouldn't have to lock up all that many of them. You know, this goes again to the political
the
promise.
People you're throwing in prison won't even know why you're putting them there.
Well, but here's the doesn't matter. Prison is a unique form of punishment, and it exists for a reason, and that is the more you have, and the further up the economic ladder you are. The worst prison sucks to you.
I happen to know two people who committed suicide rather than go to prison.
Well, yeah, okay. The guy that I walked past last weekend, homeless in Knoxville, sitting in the pedestrian tunnel to the parking garage with his dog, okay. And it was, you know, it was about 40 degrees at the time, but it was headed to like 5.
Yeah.
All right. Trust me when I tell you. That and I'm sure he would agree. Prison would be an upgrade. All right.
You sound like what's his name, the fighter, three hats and a cot.
Well, I'm just saying he's going to get fed. He's not going to freeze to death.
What about the poor dog?
Well, unfortunately, they won't let him take the dog, so he has to give up the dog. But still, from a standpoint of his standard of living, he actually gains by going to jail. Now,
yeah,
this
look at the people you got to hang around with.
Well, I get that. Okay. Well, look at the risk of him being knifed in the back when he's sleeping, as he's on the street too.
Can I follow up on your inflation? How when people buy a house, I would test to see how good your friends are. I can only have myself having this conversation with Audrey and the real estate people and stuff. Oh God. If somebody goes and buys a new house, they pay $500,000 for it, whatever they pay for it. They pay $500,000 for it, and 10 years from now, they decide to sell it.
Yep.
And they sell it. Now, if they don't get, in today's three generations, if they don't get like $600 for it, they're mightily pissed off, right?
Yeah.
Now, but if you look at it and you say, what if you said, you know, hey, Lucy, that house is only worth, if there was no inflation, that house is only worth $425.
Right.
She'd look at you and she'd go, what are you talking about? I said, it's been lived in for 10 years.
And by the way, it needs a roof.
Well, by the way, the windows, the form that don't open, you probably need, well, maybe windows last 20 years. Okay, you got a amortize half the windows. By the way, the bathroom has been used 10 times a day for 10 years. Do you think it's like it was the day it was put in? I mean, you've used it. I mean, it would cost you $75,000 to bring it up to exactly when you moved in. They'd have no idea what you and I were talking about.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, by the way, the porcelain finish on that commode is probably trashed from all the years of use and cleaning. And therefore, you really ought to...
By the way, your 20-year furnace is 10 years in.
By the way, the heat exchanger in that air conditioner is full of rust, and another five is going to leak out all the gas. Yeah, I mean, you know, this is... The thing is that all these... entropy is... that's the first law of thermodynamics, right? You can't win, you can't break even, and you can't avoid playing.
Yeah, so I mean, if you actually pay the same person $500 for the house, you're really paying $575. Even, you know, there's already been an implied inflation in there. Nobody have any idea what you and I would be talking about if we said that.
This is and of course the dirt pimps will all try to run exactly the opposite argument.
Oh yeah, right.
I just impugned someone who you happen to care a lot about, but on the other hand, how many of these people do you think I've dealt with in my life, right?
Well, there should be no, if you went, you know, and I'm going to say to the economics classes that I had, if you looked at an economy that, quote, is free, all right? There, over a period of time, I'm not saying that at times when maybe the prices are a little better or something, or we're not good at what we do, you and I should be able to make some money building houses or building apartment buildings.
Yeah.
There's a return to our effort. There's probably a return if we pick the right spot. There might be a return to our ingenuity, but it shouldn't be 100%. I mean, there's some number in there that we should continue to build houses until we reach the point where we're the same as the risk-free rate, which way we say it's not worth the risk. I mean, you should be able to rent your whole life if you and I have another job. Whatever the inflation rate should be on the house or the apartment building.
Yeah,
should be the same as the rent. It shouldn't be in a situation where I'm not going to make money on the place if I rent, but I shouldn't. Right. I shouldn't have a period of 20 years where my rent is going up, you know, 12% or something, or the guy who owns the place should like double his wealth in 10 years. It shouldn't. If things are free, that should never happen. Yet we see it happening all over the place, which tells me there's a lot of barriers, there's a lot of weird crap going on.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course there is. But, yeah, this is it's crazy. It's just absolutely crazy. And yet this is, yeah, although I'll tell you, one of the things that and it's starting,
yeah.
And I warned people about this thing coming apart on folks here in this area, because we had, during the crazy, we were open and Asheville and a bunch of other surrounding areas were locked down. Okay, you could not do anything. You couldn't go into a bar and have a beer. So all the people that wanted to go on vacation came over here and drove up the demand for short-term rentals, I mean, to the moon. Okay, places that, you know, were going for $1,500 a week, all of a sudden they're going for $5, right?
That's a number, yeah.
Yeah, it is. Well, the price of these places, if you just run a cap rate analysis on it, all of a sudden, what does that do? Well, that spikes the price, right?
So if you're foolish enough to think the $5 is going to be forever, you're going to pay a big number.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, I showed up at a couple of county commission meetings, and I got my 3 minutes, and I warned very publicly, and I also warned anybody who would listen that was, you know, in the bars and stuff around here, that if you buy into this, when Asheville reopens, because this too shall pass, I don't know when it'll happen, but it will, when Asheville reopens, when all these other areas reopen, the people that prefer the hippie vibe of Asheville to the redneck hillbilly vibe of this area, they're all going to go back there, because that's what they like, okay? And when that occurs, that excess demand and excess of supply, first law of economics, supply and demand is invariant. You can't do a damn thing about it. If the demand collapses, so does the price. And if you bought something in this, you know, in this crazy bubble environment, you're going to get it in the short and curlies, and you're not going to like it. Well, there there was a piece of property out near where I was looking before I bought. I know exactly where it is. I know the subdivision. There were not very many lots left. A lot of people like it. It's on Douglas Lake, which I personally, I would not pay any premium for being on the lake there, because it's a flood control impoundment. The level varies a great deal. It just isn't a stable body of water.
Okay? Is it dirty too, right?
Yeah, not terribly. I mean, it's you know, you can swim in it. There's fish in it. You could, you know, it is a recreational.
What's the, a little off topic, but what is the definition? I mean, one of the young ladies that played softball with us, let's just say an exceptional figure, Carol, very nice lady. She went to, her family has reunions in the Ozarks.
Right.
And she goes, and she, of course she shows a picture of her in a white bikini, which is pretty impressive. And right. And I go, what's the water like? She goes, well, it's very safe. She goes, but it's dirty. You can't see anything. And she goes, every night I'd wash my bathing suit. At the end of the week, I'd throw it out.
Yeah, it's, well,
I mean, what is that? I mean, same thing happened in Steamboat Lake. We went fishing up there in Colorado.
It's mud.
But it's just, very, it's such a fine particle stuff. It's like it's, I don't know,
well,
what
the bottom's clay, Chief.
Okay.
All right. So I mean, that's, you know, it's the clay. You know, clay is the, you know, is the primary soil around here. So I mean, it's, yeah.
But
I mean,
you can't see an inch into it.
Well, it depends. Sometimes it's actually fairly clear.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not beautiful like, you know, like a beach, right? Yeah. You know, sugar sand white. You know, yeah. No. No. It's a lake, but. Anyway, these guys, right at the start of the crazy, they built a place. It sits for a little while. It sells. So this isn't like a builder grade thing that sat and nobody bought it. It sold. And then last year they tried to get rid of it at somewhat of a profit. Utterly failed. It is currently on the market. And whoever owns it is going to take six figures up the keister.
Yep. Well, like BlackRock is doing in Texas and some of our houses. Well, you know, well, Milton Friedman said it, and this, you know, this is in a class, doesn't mean, he said one of the hardest things to understand in economics is in the short run, cost has nothing to do with price.
Right.
In the long run, he says it does. But in the short run, and you'll find that that's what happens here. I mean, people, if you get caught in there, and you know, we're not sounding old here, but it's, no matter what the company, it, at some point it's going to get priced like, okay, I'm going to give you $100. Now, you might be in a startup, you know, maybe my $100 will be worth $10,000 in a month if I'm right, like an oil right. well, or, but it's someplace, somewhere, a company, for every $100 you give them, they have to be able to tell you, Carl, Chief, you know, we make about $10 a year.
Right.
And by the way, we're going to send you a check for three or four. Someplace, yeah. Somewhere, if you're not going to get there, and it could be 20 years, it could be 5 years, but the idea, you know, the Tesla situation, I'm never giving you guys right. a dime, you know. But if you do that and you see the price go up, it's sort of incumbent on you to leak some of the, you have to take your own profits because he's never going to give them to you.
Oh, I know. But, you know,
but
I mean,
people,
like,
don't, well, feel that way. They can't,
well,
well, you know.
I know. But I mean, this thing sold in 2022 for $695. Okay, he then turned around and tried to tried to get 7.25. So I mean, that's basically got his, yeah. trying to get his closing costs back out, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, guess what? That failed. It was pulled and put back on the market at $595.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's so same thing happened supposedly down in Texas and Georgia.
Well, yeah. But I mean, but this guy, this, you know, this
guy—it's not happening here yet.
Well, I'm just saying he's going to take 100 large up the back door,
yeah.
And that's assuming it sells at that price, which I don't think it will. I think it's still overpriced. So, you know, and like so many of the things built here, it does have covered parking, but it does not actually have a garage because and I'm sure the closet space is like basically zero. It is built as a short-term rental.
Well, if you're not renting, that's a problem.
Well, if you want to live in it, it's a huge problem.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, bud, we got a dash. S&P futures down 29, NASDAQ is down 158. Big news is silver is down like $15, gold's down like $300.
PPI
Bitcoin's down.
The PPI came in a little hot.
When's CPI next week?
I don't know, but yeah, the PPI number.
How come some months PPI is before CPI and other months the other way?
Yeah, everything's all effed up because of the shutdown. The schedule normally is consistent. It's not right now. It'll settle back down.
All right, bud. We'll talk to you on Tuesday, if not before. Have a good weekend.
Bye.
That's all, folks.